Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM, the Fan, WFAN.
All right, Sweeney and Murdy on the Fan, and we're here until 10 o'clock. Thanks to Eddie Coleman for popping on for a little bit here. Solo the rest of the way till 10. And we're trying to walk and chew gum at the same time, watching baseball on TV and talking to you about it as it happens. Listen, it's not ideal to have your baseball guy on while the games are going on, right? You like, kind of like to watch them, digest them. But here we are in real time and trying to figure it out, talking to you on the radio. And I'll do the best we can to keep it together here. Helping me along the way, we've got a few more. Pauly Rosenberg is at the controls. Coming up later tonight, you'll hear from CJ Nitkowski and of MLB Network Radio, of course, and our buddy Nick Swisher, former Yankee, now with Fox Sports. You will, well, listen, if you're having trouble kind of staying awake on a Saturday night, Swish will bring the energy to bring you right back up. Right now, we check in with a guy who knows a little bit about what the Houston Astros are trying to do. And I, once again, I will apologize, Yankee fans. I know you don't want to bring this up. You can just tune out for a little bit, but don't tune off. Don't turn us off. Doug Minkiewicz was the first baseman for the 2004 Boston Red Sox. Dougie, how you doing tonight?
Sweeney, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing wonderful. Listen, it's about an hour before Game 7 starts. So what are the Houston Astros kind of thinking right now as they're getting set? They've won three. You know what it's like to be getting ready for that seventh game now. What's going on as in that final hour before the game starts?
Well, I can only speak by what was going on in our clubhouse. And a lot of craziness. Obviously, the group that I had was really loose, and I know we watched Miracle in the clubhouse in Yankee Stadium. Pedro was doing his thing, you know, in his underwear playing air guitar. We had all kinds of stuff going on. I think by Game 7, once we won Game 6, we felt like we could have played three games after that, and the momentum was with us, and we weren't going to be denied. We just couldn't wait for the game to get started.
I didn't remember the detail about Miracle. The movie came out in 04. So were you watching it every night? Were you watching something different every night, or was it just before Game 7?
Just before Game 7. I know. I think it was on TV, and I actually know a lot about that backstory. And I joking around, I had a Michael Rossioni jersey that I wore, I think, all seven games of that series before. kind of filled the guys in, and we watched it. And I know Jim Craig called Derek Lowe before the game, and it was kind of surreal. But like I said, like by the time you get to Game 6, was very nerve-wracking for us. I think it was a close game, obviously in Yankee Stadium, but I felt like we all felt like once we got to Game 7, our mantra was, we haven't done it in 86 years. If you thought we were going to do this the conventional way, you're crazy. So we wanted to make it not only more memorable than winning a World Series, but to do it as hard as we possibly could, make it as hard as we could possibly could on ourselves.
Yeah, I didn't. I should have thought about the BU connections with a lot of those hockey players, right? And Rossioni and those guys. I mean, that was just right up their alley.
Right, Rossioni's sister, I think, did some of our travel for the Red Sox at the time. Oh, wow. I know when I got traded over there, I got there and I met Mike before. He was a Toledo Gold Digger, of all things, which is a minor league hockey team in Toledo. And I grew up in Toledo. My parents had season tickets and obviously the winning goal in the 80 Olympics. And I met him in 2000 at a Sports Illustrated Man of the Year award in New York. And I'll never forget this. I was standing next to John Havlicek, and I know him. And I knew him and Tom Seaver. Both those guys, rest in peace. And wow. There was one other one. Oh, Bill Russell. How do you forget that?
Oh, yeah.
But I'm sitting there talking to those three, and I saw Mike across the way, and I literally pushed those guys out of the way. I was like, I have to meet this guy. And long story short, when I got traded to Boston, my jersey was on my chair because his sister does the travel. So I kind of figured, you know, we need a little magic at the time, and I busted out the jersey, and the rest is history.
You know, you mentioned something that I talked about last hour, and I wonder what kind of a difference it is. You had to play Game 6 and 7 in Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. The Astros are technically the road team, so Tampa Bay gets the bat last. But, you know, let's be honest. This isn't – I know we all make fun of the Rays' home games, but I think we've seen in playoff games what that atmosphere can be like. And mm-hmm. what the Astros are – you know, what kind of target they have on their backs – wherever they would play this year if fans were in the stands. So they kind of have, you know, I mean, they kind of lucked out here, didn't they, not having to play Game 7 in a hostile environment?
Agreed. I saw, you know, between the whole season, I think everybody saw the wear and tear of what went on, let's say, in spring training. Obviously, the pandemic hits. But you see that the fact that that team only had a below 500 record to start with, I think they breathed a sigh of relief once they got to the playoffs. And, you know, but I guess they it must feel like they're on the house's money anyways. And they know they're good. They're battle tested. And, you know, playing in that environment, I think it's, you know, to me, both teams in that regard, I mean, I truly feel like as good as the Rays are, you can't survive with the bullpen days kind of type thing for 162. Mm-hmm. You can do it for a short sprint. Absolutely. I think for the most part, it's one of those things I get a kick out of listening to guys, and they bring up a really good point about how, you know, if you know, you're up 3-1 or up 3-0, you kind of have, with all the seven games in a row, you have innings to play with and who you bring in, the strategy of that. But to me, it's like, who do you bring in if you're one run down? It's like, you might not be one run down in the next two games, so you might not even use your guys. So
sure.
To me, it's like, you know, momentum can switch so fast. I mean, I think back to Game 7. I know Manny got a hit in the first inning, and Johnny Damon got a bad jump at second, and Matsui threw it to Derek, and Derek obviously threw a strike home and got him out. And, you know, I remember sitting next to Dave Roberts going, uh-oh, like, was that the momentum bubble that just got burst?
Yeah.
And sure enough, David ended up, I think two pitches later, David hit a home run. And it kind of was like, well, never mind. And like David's hit, obviously, of all the ones that everybody remembers, that first inning homer that after a momentum swing of getting the guy thrown out of the plate was the biggest hit by far, and that set us off for the rest of Game 7.
And you know, and that's a, you know, that helps quiet down the hostile environment when you're talking about winning Game 6 at Yankee Stadium. I want to backtrack a little bit. We're talking to Doug Minkiewicz, who's on the 04 Red Sox. And once again, I apologize to all you Yankee fans out there for even bringing this up, but it's happened, and it might happen again here. So that's why we're talking about it. What happened in the hours between the end of Game 3 and the start of Game 4? You got blown out in Game 3. 19-8 is the final. And now you're staring down 3-0. I know you weren't on the team the year before, but, I mean, you've been there long enough now for a couple of months. You know what everybody's dealing with, and you know the history of it. What are the hours like between Game 3 ending, which I think was like late on a Saturday night, and then Game 4 the next day?
Not a lot of sleep. I know that team I was on, we didn't get really mad when we lost. Like, we were upset, but, we always had that feel of, okay, like, tomorrow's a new day, but I remember, like, the demeanor of the club after that game was obviously, you know, not demoralized, but just like almost not shocked, because then anything can happen in baseball. But we were just like we just got kicked in the teeth, and you know, I funny stories. Like, I remember going, you know, we joked around, we went and got sleep, we did everything right, I guess the way that it was supposed to be, and next thing you know. After Game 3, I remember David invited my parents over to his house, and we had some beers and trying to flush it, and it was rather late when we finally went home. And the motto was like, hey guys, we've done it, you know, one way all year. We changed it and went home and really kind of basically we got back to who we were. And if that was, you know, less sleep is better, whatever it was. And we joked around the next day, we brought in like We brought in one piece of luggage because we were going to ship it home, being that the season was over with. And we kind of just played it off as like that. And, you know, Kevin's motto, like, well, don't let us win tonight because we have so-and-so. And that's kind of the way we thought about it. And I thought Terry Francona did a at the time, you don't think of it. I remember thinking, like that's really the – like my dad was Polish, so keep it simple, stupid. All he kept saying to us is win today. And I was like, well, you know, no crap. Like, that's what we're trying to – we do that every day. But, like, when you break it down in the simplest terms, you know, if you win today – because I don't think the Yankees had lost four games in a row in, like, 2 or 3 years, I want to say. And knowing that, you know, we're looking at Sheffield and A-Rod and Derek and Posada, the list goes on and on. We're like, if you looked at it that way, it was a little overwhelming. But if you just kind of broke it down and said, we have to win today, and we can do that. And, like, not just worry about we got to win four in a row. We got to win tonight first. And I think we took that motto, whatever was needed at that time, we did, and that team was really good at that.
And Francona's brilliance, it seemed to be in that moment especially, was letting the inmates run the asylum, right? I mean, Millar comes to him with these ideas, and I remember him telling me about, you know, he didn't like how the Yankees would try to psych you out in their ballpark by playing all the great highlights and while you're taking batting practice and showing Babe Ruth Yankeeographies and World Series highlights while the Red Sox were on the field. So he said, listen, we're not taking BP on the field. We're not doing that. I'm not going to let them do that to us. So letting the inmates run the asylum and know you really had nothing to lose, that seemed to be part of Terry's great strength in that series.
Correct. And Terry had a great knack of, you know, he was the first manager I ever had that would literally walk around during batting practice and like walk the field and like, you know, he took the pulse of, you know, he took the pulse of Manny, he took the pulse of David, but he also did it to our relievers and myself included. And he just kind of made himself around and was very, you know, personable, and he kept it. His demeanor never changed. And at the time I remember thinking, like, every night I'd be like, man, maybe I'll start tomorrow, you know, cause you know, just to change things up. And looking back on it, as much as it hurt me as a player to not have an opportunity to like be the guy that changes things, like to start, he stayed status quo and he kept starting the same guys. And that just, to me, was a calming factor of being like, okay, these are the guys that got me here. I trust them, and we have a plan, and we're going to stick with it, and it's going to work. And it goes from Theo on down because, you know, you see it now today where, you know, games are mapped out before the game even starts. And I mean, the list goes on and on. The close things that went our way. I mean, Tony Clark's ground rule doubled on the right field line. I mean, I played with Miguel Cairo the next year and with the Mets, and he was the one that was running. And I'm like, if that ball stays up, we lose. You know, I think of Jason Veritek catching Wakefield, and that they didn't. He never caught him all year.
Right.
And you know, I mean, and Wake was like absolutely unconsciously dealing at the time. But Jason was having a hard time, which most people do, having a hard time catching him. Like, I'm thinking, playing defense, going, oh, my gosh, are we going to lose our season because Wake's going to strike out five guys and give up two runs in one inning? Because, you know, it's like, Jason, Doug Marabelli always caught Wake. So, like, little things like that stick out. But, you know, Terry did a phenomenal job of kind of letting us be us. But yet we also, as professionals, didn't take it over the line to where it didn't affect us on the field.
The you know, the turning point moment that I keep coming back to now is in game six, and I forgot that you're on the field because it's late enough in the ball game when A-Rod slaps the ball out of Bronson Arroyo's hands. It's you have the best seat in the house, you know, and that's, you know, obviously A-Rod's taken a lot of grief for a long time in New York for a lot of different things. That happens to be one of the biggest ones, and you go back a long ways. You guys actually played at the same high school. What do you remember about that specific moment? How, you know, the energy in the stadium turning, and maybe the energy in your own dugout and clubhouse turning?
I remember I was in no man's land. I mean, you're taught on those balls, you go through them to nausea them in spring training. It's the I got it, you take it ball. And the first baseman's job is always go after the ball. Well, Bronson was a heck of an athlete coming off the field in his position, and he fielded it. And I was in no man's land because you couldn't hear what was going on. And I remember, like, literally, like, if I have to draw a charge here, like, I'll draw a charge. Like, but give me the ball. And, you know, and Alex, I remember sticking his meat claw out, and he smacked Bronson. And I was thinking in my head, like, well, one, all he had to do was take one more step, and he runs into me, and he's safe. Mm-hmm. And I remember him backpedaling, and he snapped the ball out of Bronson's hands. And I remember turning around, And I ran after the ball and I threw it in. And I remember looking at Randy Marsh, the umpire, going, Randy, and I was like laughing. I was like, Randy, please tell me you saw that. Like, I was like, I can't believe he just did that. And Randy's like, Doug, you blocked me out. I didn't see it. So, like, I went from immediately laughing to like, oh no, he didn't see that. I run over to, I'm drawing a blank right now. I run over to Joe West. I'm like, Joe, please tell me you saw that. And he's like, and he kind of gave me like, he gave me his hand, like, hang on a second. And I was like, I started getting worried. And I remember standing behind the mound. I was going, they had to see that, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget when Joe West came out and called him out. Joe West walked over to me and he goes, Doug, I saw it. I just couldn't tell you. I wanted to get everybody in the middle of the field so we didn't start getting hit with bottles in the head. And I sort of, and I thought it was a great line because, I mean, after like that rest of that game, it was, I mean, they were like, Yankee fans were restless and they brought the dogs out and the cops. And I was like, this is a playoff game. Like, this is what baseball's all about. I'm like, this mm-hmm. is perfect. But yeah, I still joke with A-Rod. I'm like, if you just kept running instead of smacking the ball out, I'm like, and then the whole, like, my just got caught putting my hand in the cookie jar when I was 4 years old. And my parents saw me eating a cookie. I was like, you stand at second base. I'm like, why? What happened? I go, you big baby. I go, just keep running. And you would have ran into me, and the whole thing would have changed. But that was definitely one of those moments where, like, it went from, okay, I hope you saw that, but oh, if you didn't, we're in trouble, because that momentum was definitely swinging out after that play.
And I think, you know, Derek Lowe, I mean, listen, you guys jumped on Kevin Brown, Javi Vazquez. The Yankees simply ran out of pitching. They, you know, they didn't have anybody to stop the bleeding at that point. But Derek Lowe, I keep forgetting, was coming back on 2 days rest and did a pretty good job on that series.
Yeah, and he forgot his cleats. So I remember they had to run out to like a local, they had to run out to a local sporting goods store and buy his cleats. I remember thinking, like, we're up 8-3 or something, whatever it was. And I, all of a sudden the fans started going nuts and I'm like, what's going on? I looked out and Pedro's warming up and I was like,
yeah,
well, that's one way to rile him back up. You know, I was like, oh, here. And I saw him coming in the game, but we just thought he was going down to get work in for hopefully his, you know, the next end of the World Series. And I'm like, he's going to bring him into this game. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, and that boy, I remember, like, they always show that one clip of when the fans are screaming at Who Your Daddy. For one, there was one fan that I remember they always pan to. I remember seeing his face, and he looked like an ex-teammate of mine. But oh. I remember feeling like I could feel the Who's Your Daddy. Like, I couldn't, yeah. Like, you could hear it, but, like, you could feel the breath of the fans screaming. And I was like, this is, like, obviously it's cool when you're up by 5 or 6 runs, but I was like, this is pretty neat. Like, this doesn't get much better than this. And then they kept getting hits. I'm like, okay, this is not fun anymore. Like, can we please get some outs here so we can get out of here? But that was one of those, like I said, I'm grateful that I was a part of that. That was some really special baseball.
I will spare everybody, the Yankee fans listening, all the gory details about Dave Roberts, Bill Miller, the bloody sock. I mean, we all know those details. So I'm going to leave that part alone. But I want to know, as you're watching tonight, what are you going to be looking for? Like, what's going to tell you who has some sort of, you know, I don't know. Is it silly? Can you have a mental edge here? Do you look at? Can you ever look on a field and know who's psyched out? Who's got it together? Is there something you could look for tonight that will tell you that answer?
Tense. Who stays at the same level, and like the first whoever lands the first blow is to me is huge in this game. If you kind of quiet the Astros early in the game and kind of make it a game again, I think that's going to be huge for the Rays. If they can throw up a couple zeros early,
yeah.
To me, it's like if you let, you know, the other team start, it's going to be tough because I feel like, you know, the Astros are on a roll, and I'm not a big believer in momentum in playoff games in that regard. But the biggest reason why we got moving was because David hit a 2-run homer. And Derek Lowe was unbelievable. It's one of those things, though, but you can sense it as a player. You can sense whether the other team is tense, or they start thinking about, that's where, like, to me, game six is so big, because if you're going to put somebody away, it better be in game six, because game seven, you know, one mistake, you kind of have that fear, like that feel of, oh, we can go ahead and make a mistake, and that's not a good feeling as a baseball player, because as soon as you feel that, the other team can capitalize on that. And that's why I didn't agree with everybody, like, oh, he can pitch his other guys when only down a run.
Yeah.
And if you believe in your club, you go get the win when you can.
Yeah.
And you don't let anybody breathe in October. And you know, for us, it was by game seven, we felt like we've got nothing to lose. You know, we've done something already that no one's ever done. And there's no way we're going to allow this to happen to us now. We didn't win three games in a row to go ahead and throw a goose egg out on this one. And that, you know, like I said, to me, it's a who can jump, who can throw the first punch tonight.
Just a couple more minutes with Doug Minkiewicz from the 0-4 Red Sox. Astros and Rays are coming up later. The Dodgers lead the Braves 3-1, eighth inning right now. Atlanta batting top of the eighth. Dodgers trying to force game seven there after being down 3-1. Doug, you spent how many years now managing in the minor leagues?
Seven or eight. I think seven.
Okay. So what kind of – this is the thing I fear that we're not going to see the full effect of until, I don't know, maybe – 2 years down the road, maybe 3 years down the road. But the lack of player development this season, because the minor leagues were non-existent in the situation we're in, we're seeing some players come up in these postseasons with zero experience, literally, and come up and have big moments. But over the course of what a full baseball season is supposed to look like, those types of players would get exposed. How much damage has been done, and it's nobody's fault, how much damage has been done to player development because of what we just went through?
I think it's been huge. You know, whether quote-unquote prospects coming off a bad year, he just needs to play, who hasn't played. I think you're hit the nail right on the head as far as it's going to be a couple of years before we really see, you know, the difference. You know, you think of, you know, everybody wants to point at the AA and AAA guys who are knocking on the door. But those lower level A ball kids,
exactly,
that are, you know, those are the kids that really need the year to really kind of, you know, perfect the changeup or perfect fastball command, or, you know, the ones that have the, you know, everybody at that level for the most part can go while you in a bullpen session. It's what do you do when your back's against the wall and your wind's on the line, and how are you going to pitch to that guy in the fifth or sixth inning to get you over the hump? You don't have those game situations, which is huge. Just the everyday grind of it too. You know, like you said it again, like it's easier to do it when a 60 game sprint than 162. You can get a glimpse of a guy and ride a guy's hot streak and really like ride it. But to do it to where guys have, you know, the regular scouting and the regular guys in the stands that are their job is to find a way to get you out and how to make adjustments. That's the part that's going to be tough. And like I said, these younger kids are going to have to, you know, I know every year as a minor league manager, we have our meetings. You have a certain handful of guys you're really concerned about going home and being on their own. Are they going to do the work? Are they going to do the things we ask them to do? Are they going to do their weights? Are they going to do their running? Are they going to do their arm care? And when you go a full year without having that feel of having them around and underneath your roof, it's like a child. You know, it's like they're your kids. And, you know, you worry about it when they go home and they go off somewhere else where you don't have them under your supervision. So, you know, the organizations do an amazing job nowadays of keeping track of their guys. But when there's a handful of guys you really, really worry about sending home, and good and bad, there's always kids that come back and you're like, wow, this kid's really matured, or he's really hit the weight room, or he did his stuff. And the other guys are like, uh-oh, what product are we getting back after a couple of years?
I know you spent a lot of time in the Twins organization, moved over to the Tigers with Ron Gardenhire over there. There's an opening there. Are you in the mix there? Are you going back to the minor leagues there? What's happening there?
I seriously doubt that. I my phone's on, and I miss it. I miss it. But as of now, I'm coaching a high school down in the Florida Keys. So that should be interesting. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be tough again with all these, you know, who knows what's going to happen with this pandemic. And I would feel like it'd be really tough for, let's just say, minor league guys to lose their job when they didn't even have a season.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, we'll see. I'm looking forward to one day getting back into it. I miss it. But like I said, I have, for example, the playoffs. I mean, I'm looking at least 20 to 25 kids that I had, if not more. I mean,
wow.
My first baby I had as a hitting coach was Corey Seager and Jock Peterson from the Dodgers. And then, you know, a funny thing is one of my hitters was Danny Baez Baez from the Dodgers, who's a pitcher now. And I could,
oh, yeah.
I get razzed about that, going, yeah, you had him as a hitting coach, and I'm like, that's why he's a pitcher now. So I've had those kids. I've had, obviously, the Twins guys. There's three of my guys that are on the Rays pitching staff, and Nick Anderson, John Curtis, and Aaron Sleggers. So, you know, there's guys all over the place that I still get texts from, and seeing them compete in the postseason is pretty cool. It's like, I won't say you're a proud father, but you're like a proud uncle, because you realize you had a hand in helping these guys, and you had experiences with them to see them do these things is a pretty cool experience.
Well, I know how highly people spoke of you when you were in Fort Myers, the Twins organization, and I hope you get your shot one day. Even if it's not soon, I hope one day you get to put on that managing cap in the big leagues. And I really appreciate you giving us some time here and kicking back some of those memories. I know they get a little foggy after a little while, but it's always fun to dust them off. Thanks a lot for the time, Dougie.
You got it, Sweeney. Anytime, buddy.
All right, that's Doug Minkiewicz from the 04 Boston Red Sox, and he ended up playing with the Mets, with the Yankees, and he's a managerial candidate at some point here, and we'll see if he gets his chance.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.